accession number 28637, reel number 2.
Mrs. Alison Selford, reel 2.
Good gracious, talked my way through one reel and I haven't even got to the point yet. But
well, this is very interesting.
You did ask me about the Communist Party. So we went along to this meeting of would-be playwrights, and Wilfred got up and explained to the playwrights that if you were writing a play about a strike, it was a little bit unrealistic to have all the characters instantly converted to communism and lining up at the front of the stage to sing the International after only half an hour. He thought this gave people an unrealistic picture. And explaining this in his little squeaky voice, he sounded so funny. And I was quite enchanted. I mean, Wilfred had many defects, but goodness, he could always talk beautifully. And somebody said at the next meeting, Jack Selford himself will be present. Now, the reason he was himself was that he was the new head of Unity Theatre's play department, who read all the plays sent in. So I was determined to meet this great thinker and went along the following week to hear more about the plays sent into Unity Theatre and what they really wanted. At that time, they were putting on exclusively plays that came from America because that was the only left-wing theatre material there was. Clifford Odets wrote a play called Waiting for Lefty, which we all thought very highly of at the time. I don't think we still should. And he became a Hollywood scriptwriter and tried to suppress Waiting for Lefty after a while, understandably, because really and truly it's the most awful rubbish, but still, we all thought very highly of it at the time. And nobody could rival Clifford Odets and the other Americans when it came to writing left-wing plays. So the great Jack Selford himself turned up, and he was a failed shopkeeper from the East End. His marriage had broken down and he'd lost interest in the shop. That was why it failed. He was It was a very tragic situation. His little boy was being looked after. He'd arranged for the little boy to be looked after because a delinquent wife wouldn't look after him or intermittently looked after him, but didn't give him the continuous care he needed. And he had this little boy's picture all over his little office at Unity Theatre. And everybody was terribly, terribly sorry for him. And the most awful thing was that he was clearly still in love with the delinquent wife he couldn't stop talking about. Then the chap with whom she had run away, an awful scoundrel called John Cross. Gosh, he's probably still alive. Better not libel him. But anyway, he was a bit of a scoundrel. He made a pass at me once, but it was just habit. He did it to every girl he met. But
we better get on to how you became a communist yourself.
Coming to that. Uh-huh. I am coming to that. You see, Jack Selford fancied himself as a Marxist theoretician. His education had been considered very scrappy because, I mean, nowadays such a clever boy would go to a university, no question. But his father couldn't afford that. He been to, he'd learned bookkeeping, which was needed in the father's factory, and shorthand and typing. He's the only man I ever met who was a brilliant shorthand typist. And so he'd got these skills that had been needed in his father's factory. Then when he married this wife, he was still very young, and his father had set him up in a shoe shop, which, as I say, broke down when the marriage broke down because he was too distracted to give it his full attention. And also, of course, there was a slump going on. People couldn't not buy food, but they could put off buying a new pair of shoes for a bit. And he actually loathed being a shopkeeper, he decided, and he was much happier working full-time for Unity Theatre. They paid him a little extra so that he could get his little boy looked after. And so he was the one who talked me into joining the Communist Party, and this was, oh dear, in the spring of 1939. I was not quite 19. And, of course, I still had misgivings about Russia, so I started learning Russian at evening classes and booked a trip to Russia in the summer of 1939. Now, my life might have turned out quite differently if I'd gone on the trip, but it was due to start in August 39. My parents very rightly and justly got worried. As it happened, I would have been back with a few days to spare before the outbreak of war, but then we did not know exactly when the war would break out. People can't see round corners. I can't blame my parents for being worried. They were terrified they'd get stuck in Russia, and which wouldn't have been nice, let's face it. Certainly I would have lost my illusions if I'd have got stuck in Russia, but there. But did I then know enough Russian after a year of evening classes to get thoroughly disillusioned with Russia? It's a moot point. Very interesting question. When I did go to Russia, which wasn't until 1962, I think, I had carefully learned a good deal of Russian and I could follow what was going on and, above all, read the adverts. Although it was a communist country, you were allowed to advertise for workers. Factories did advertise for workers, wanted a foreman, and they would give the foreman's pay, and the pay of the foreman would be what our official guide had told us was the average wage. Well, it was clearly, if it was offered to a foreman as an inducement, it wasn't the average wage, was it? That sort of thing. And I had conversations with Russians I met in the street. This was, as I say, wasn't until 1962 when I was already disillusioned. So suppose I'd had those conversations in 1939. Would I have got disillusioned with Russia then? Or would I have come back, as people did come back from these trips, still with their illusions intact? I don't know. It's a very interesting one. Cannot live one's life through again and ask oneself, would I have behaved differently? What would have happened if? I don't know. But
this, of course, would have been August 1939.
August 1939. Yes. So instead of going to the trip to Russia, I went on a summer school organized by Unity Theatre, where various people gave various excuses for the Russian behavior, of which, I mean, the pact with Germany, so-called non-aggression pact with Germany, hit us with tremendous shock waves, but never fear, there was somebody on hand to explain it all away, yes. And
how was it explained? Can you remember what you were told about?
Oh, yes. Now, what on earth was this chap talking about? He wasn't even one of the Communist Party hierarchy. He was a journalist from Reynolds News, Montague Slater. And he was... and a would-be playwright, but he was hopeless at that. And he was explaining that it was just all showed Stalin's enthusiasm for peace or something. I know the explanation was so nonsensical I nearly fell asleep in the middle of it. But then Jack Selford himself appeared, and as he was the one who'd got me into the Communist Party, naturally I asked him what he thought, and he said there wasn't going to be a war, which taught me about trusting mentors and gurus, or you would have thought it did. And then then, as clearly the war was about to break out, I joined the Women's Land Army, where I was. I didn't go back to London. The summer school had taken place in a very beautiful part of Dorset, called Ewan Minster, near the little town of Beaminster, which is pronounced Bemister. And now have I got that right? No, the nearest town was called Blandford, that's right, Blandford in Dorset. And when the war broke out, the Communist Party was supporting it, you may remember, or you probably don't. I don't suppose you were alive in those days.
No, I thought when the war broke out, before Russia was involved, the Communist Party called it an imperialist war.
Wait a minute, not at first. Not at first. Harry Follett wrote a passionate pamphlet headed, Why We Must Win This War. Everybody was all for the war, except a gruesome old man called Palm Dutt, who figures in my book. But anyway, no, they were all for it for fully a fortnight. In the meantime, awful things were happening to me. My first attempt at joining the Land Army came to an abrupt end when I drank some water, and I shouldn't have drunk water from a tap in that village, and I was taken off to hospital with, I forget, a streptococcal infection, and was ill for 4 months. And while I was ill, all sorts of things took place which I had no part in. The British communists had had an emissary in Moscow who, of course, once the war broke out, couldn't get back. The fear of being trapped in Russia when the war broke out was very, very real. He had an awful job getting back. I think he got back through Sweden or through Finland or through one of the neutral countries. And when he got back, which wasn't for 2 or 3 weeks after the war broke out, he had the new line with him scribbled on a bit of paper. I think scribbled on a dirty cigarette packet is one legend, but I'm not sure about that. And he said, this is an imperialist war. That's from Stalin. Well, of course, if it came from Stalin, it must be right, mustn't it? But the two people who stood out against it for quite a while were Harry Pollitt, who had written the pamphlet, Why We Must Win This War, and Johnny Campbell, whom I afterwards got to know very well. And they both insisted it was not an imperialist war, it was an anti-fascist war. Campbell with particular fervour. He was a much more intelligent man than Harry Pollitt, but I am bringing this in as if I'd known it at the time, and I didn't. The discussions they had behind closed doors remained secret until quite recently when they were all published. You can read them now and you realise that Campbell was head and shoulders above all the rest intellectually. But it wasn't clear to us then what was going on. So I emerged from hospital not knowing what the hell had happened or how it could suddenly have turned into an imperialist war or anything about it. And only gradually resumed contact with the Communist Party. I felt very lonely without it. People do. I think that's probably what's the matter with your friend. He feels he hasn't got any mummy, daddy, brothers, sisters, relations if he isn't in the Communist Party. And so it was very difficult. Well, I went back to being a land girl, and this time I got some proper training for the job, which clearly had been lacking the first time round. Learned how to milk a cow, by machine, because milking machines were spreading right through the English countryside then. We were actually far ahead of any other country by the end of the war. Technically, British farming was the most efficient in the world. Of course, parts of America were better, but not the small farms of America were nowhere near ours for efficiency. So I had to learn how to milk by machine and various things, but I was a rotten land girl. I mean, I hadn't got the physical strength. I could drive a tractor. Well, I managed to damage the tractor at 8 miles an hour, I'm sorry to say. And I was an absolutely hopeless land girl, really. I kept it up all one winter. Of course, I was very keen on organising the farm workers into a trade union. There was a union for the farm workers, but it had scarcely spread to Somerset. It was stronger in the eastern counties, where farm workers worked together in larger numbers. So I made quite a sensation by forming it in a little Somerset village called Newton St. Lo near Bath. And I was, I used to go round and tell farmers they weren't paying the legal wages, because by that time there was a legal wage for farm workers. They weren't supposed to go below it. It was low enough. It was something like 32 shillings and sixpence a week in Somerset. It varied from county to county. Well, and I usually managed to get away before the farmer set the dog on me, but I made quite an impact in a small way because nobody had heard of a trade union before. But, however, my inefficiency with tractors meant, to everybody's relief, I gave up being a land girl This was in the spring of 41. And I joined the civil defence in Bristol. And
before you tell me about that...
Oh, yes.
You know, this is so interesting, the fact that, you know, you were working to form the trade unions for the agricultural workers.
Yes.
What was the reaction from the farm labourers?
They loved it. They were thrilled with it. They were absolutely thrilled to learn that they were human beings with rights. I regret many things in my life, but not that. There I did the right thing. But it's a pity I got the communist rubbish mixed up with it.
Did that confuse things, do you think? The fact that
I was known to be a communist. Of course it did, yes. Discredited the good things I was doing.
And this, of course, would have been before Russia was in the war, wouldn't it? I dare say might have been a bit different after that.
They're quite different, yes. The whole attitude of communists changed.
This is end of Reel 2. Mrs. Selford, Mrs. Alison Selford.